Mr. Liaifan taught him that it was important to remember that even in times of prosperity, he was to act as if he was not prosperous. Thus, even if he attained great wealth and social position, became a high-ranking official with much prestige and much influence, he still needed to remember the times when he had none of these. Why was there a need to remember this? Because in the future, even if we become prosperous, we would do well to remain humble and courteous, not giving rise to arrogant thoughts or a haughty attitude that we have wealth and prestige while others do not. If we can remain humble, then we will nurture true virtue and good fortune. Even when everything is going very smoothly, we also need to remember when times were difficult. In this way, even when things are going our way, we will remain cautious and not become careless. Guliangju was a famous prime minister in the Shu Han period of the Three Kingdoms, 1700 years ago. He was able to remain successful throughout his life because he was careful and discreet. Right now, even when we have enough food and clothing, we need to remain thrifty. If we are constantly able to do this, when we have wealth and prestige, then we will be able to improve in both moral conduct and in benevolent behavior. A good example in Chinese history was Mr. Zhong Yanfan. Mr. Fan was from a very poor family background. When he was young and studying at Wei places, he had little to eat. Every day, he would cook a pot of porridge, divide it into four portions, and have one portion for each meal. In this manner, he passed the days in a state of impoverishment. When he prospered later in life and became a prime minister, during the Song Dynasty, 1800 years ago, he was under the supervision of the emperor and was in a higher position than anyone else. But he maintained his simple manner of living and changed very little. When he earned more, he would think of those who were poverty-stricken and used his earnings to help them. By reading his biography, we learn that he supported over 300 families. With the income of one person helping 300 families, we know that they would have also been living in impoverished conditions. If he had lived affluently, he never would have been able to help so many people. He was truly one of China's great sages. The esteem that Master Yingguang held for him was second only to that which he held for Confucius. Mr. Fan's descendants continued until the early part of this century. This is because he fostered merits and virtues to last over 100 generations. The family of Confucius is foremost as an old and well-known family, followed by that of Mr. Fan. Mr. Fan's family lineage remains strong through 800 years due to his exceptional cultivation and accumulation of merits. Great good fortune is when we are able to share it with others. For in this way, our ensuing good fortune will become inexhaustible. The descendants of Mr. Fan continued the family tradition of helping others until the early part of this century. Throughout Chinese history, there were not many families who accumulated this much good virtue. In his commentary, Master Yin Guang told of another person, a Mr. Ye, the premier scholar of the Qing dynasty. His family lineage remained strong for 300 years. It is thus obvious that the utmost priority in life is for us to refrain from wrongdoings, to cultivate good deeds, and accumulate merits and virtues. From the book. And when loved and respected by all, remain careful and conservative. When the family is greatly respected and revered, carry yourself humbly. When your learning is extensive and profound, always think that the more you learn, the less you feel that you know. End quote. We would do well to avoid being overwhelmed by an unexpected favor. It is good for others to love and be protective of us. However, we need to think, what is there about us that is worthy of this love and care, is deserving of the respect of others? We need to be constantly apprehensive of the deficiencies in our abilities. It is good to think this way, to constantly reflect upon ourselves, to progress in our cultivation of virtue, and not to disappoint the expectations of others. These are all sufficient in eradicating our arrogance. Arrogance is one of the five major afflictions and is related to the other four afflictions of greed, anger, ignorance, and doubt. Indeed, this was a very good place and a very good way for him to start eradicating afflictions. By completely severing our afflictions, we will be able to uncover our virtuous nature, to truly achieve in our cultivation of virtue. From the text. When thinking of the past, we can advocate the virtues of our ancestors. When thinking of the present, we can conceal the faults of our own parents. When thinking of the country, we can think of how we can repay its kindness to us. And when thinking of the family, we can think of how to bring about our family's good fortune. When thinking of the outside, think of how to help those in need around us. And when thinking of within, think of how to prevent improper thoughts and actions from arising. End quote. Within this chapter lies the key to changing destiny. What we are thinking inside will be the guidelines for increasing our virtues and morality and for developing good deeds. In the past, Chinese education taught of the relationship between humans, between humans and spirits, and between humans and nature. It taught to be constantly thinking of the past, to honor and make known the virtues of our ancestors. If we were respected by society for our moral principles and ethics, knowledge and profession, we would honor our ancestors. In today's society, what is the driving force behind most people's hard work? Wealth, fame, prestige. Most people will do whatever is necessary to acquire these. Why? The acquisition of wealth urges people, drives people forward. If there were no wealth to gain, who would be willing to work so hard? Very few. In the past, the driving force behind people's hard work was filial piety and their mindfulness of their ancestors and parents. They did their best in cultivating and accumulating merits and virtues on their behalf and to honor them. This driving force is much worthier and nobler than that of wealth, fame, and prestige. This has been the tradition of Chinese culture and Confucian teaching for several thousands of years. Buddhism is based on the foundation of filial piety. Thus, the ritual of making offerings to ancestors and the establishment of ancestral memorial halls is highly regarded, as it is the ultimate root and foundation of Chinese tradition. If we were able to be filial towards parents and ancestors, if we were able to remember our root, then we will naturally be able to think and conduct ourselves properly to refrain from wrongdoings. When we are thinking of the present, we can conceal the faults of our parents. If the children are filial, if they have contributed to society, then even if their parents have committed small offenses, people will overlook them. People will praise the parents for having raised such filial, such honorable children. When thinking of the country, we can think of how we can repay its kindness to us. The country or government has the mission of being a responsible leader, parent, and teacher to us citizens, of providing a place where people can live and work in peace and contentment. In return, the citizens should be loyal, patriotic, and dedicate themselves to the country. When thinking of the family, we can think of how to bring about our family's good fortune. Being mindful of the family does not just refer to the nuclear family, but to the extended family as it was thought of in the past. As a member, we need to be mindful in creating family good fortune for the whole, not just the immediate part, but for the extended family as well. Therefore, when one person achieves good fortune, the entire extended family will benefit as well. When thinking of the outside, think of how to help those in need around us. Always bearing in mind the interests of society, we need to do all that we can to serve society, to create good fortune for others. In today's society, the most urgent need is reviving and developing the education of morality and ethics. When thinking of within, think of how to stop improper thoughts and actions from arising. We need to stop improper thoughts from arising. We need to be mindful of what we are supposed to be doing and to let go of excessive ambitions. If all of us were able to do so, then we would fulfill our responsibilities. Our society would be fortunate and harmonious, and the world would be at peace. Mencius explained that if people of noble character and integrity can be loyal to their responsibility, then in this way, truth can be revealed. In Confucian teaching, this responsibility refers to the five human relationships, including those between husband and wife, parent and child, siblings, friends, political leaders, and the public. He also spoke of the 10 moral responsibilities. All of this means that we need to fulfill our responsibilities towards society and all others. Whatever we have responsibility for, we need to accomplish earnestly and diligently in order to create good fortune for our family and society. From the book, one needs to be able to find one's faults every day and to correct them every day. If one is unable to find any faults in oneself, then one will think that everything he or she does is all right. Then they will be unable to correct their faults, and improvement will be out of the question. End quote. Awakening is being able to detect our faults every day. It is the perfect, complete enlightenment. We start this process when we bring forth the vow to become an equal enlightenment bodhisattva. Once we discover our faults daily, we need to correct them. This is cultivation. It is to correct our thoughts and behavior daily. It is the true achievement in the cultivation of great sages and virtuous people. This is the key to changing our destiny, to leave suffering behind and to achieve happiness. When most people are unable to become virtuous sages in one lifetime and are unable to achieve in their cultivation, they will find that the problem lies here. To know our own faults is to awaken every day. Once we discover a fault, we need to correct it. In this way, we will build our strength from cultivation. To sincerely reform, we gain strength from our cultivation. We do not need to do a lot. If we were to find and correct just one fault every day, then in 3 years, we would become a sage or a virtuous person. As practitioners who chant the Buddha's name, if we are able to correct one fault every day and to be mindful of Buddha Amitabha, then in 3 years, we could achieve birth into either the high or middle levels of the Western Pure Land. This is the way to cultivate to become a Buddha. The question is whether we are willing to do so earnestly. We are deluded if we are unable to find one fault every day. If we do not know them, we cannot correct them. How can we hope to improve in this way? When there is no improvement, there is regression. We then fall behind. To regard ourselves as infallible, to believe that everything we do is correct, is the most horrible way for us to live. From the text. There are many intelligent people in the world who cannot make improvements in cultivating morality and virtue, nor can they make improvements in their work. Their failures in this life are owed to a single word, laziness. End quote. If we live for the present, if we are lethargic, if we are lazy, then we will be bound by our fate. How we are born and die, where we will go after we die, all accords with our destinies. Master Yuan Gu addressed ordinary people like this, as Philistines who blindly follow what has been destined. They are what the Buddhists call pitiful creatures. These principles which Mr. Liaofan taught his son are the principles for both worldly education as well as for the Buddhist teachings. They must not be ignored. From the text. Tianqi. The teachings of Master Yuan Gu are truly the most worthy, profound, real, and proper teachings. And I hope that you will be well versed in them and practice them diligently. You must use your time wisely and not let it slip by in vain. End quote. Mr. Liaofan carefully wrote down the principles and methods that the master had taught him in changing his destiny and passed them on to his son, hoping that he too would follow this method. Mr. Liaofan had achieved remarkable results from this practice, and thus he firmly believed in all the principles and methods that the master had taught to him. We need to be very familiar with Master Yuan Gu's teachings, to ponder them deeply, to carefully appreciate the meanings within. When we are constantly mindful of the teachings, we will savor them. Then we will use them as the basis for our behavior and practice them diligently. We should not waste this life or allow it to pass by pointlessly. We need to broaden our perception, expand our thinking. Instead of being concerned with trivialities, instead of calculating our gains, our losses, life is very short. It would be of tremendous merit if we were to do more good acts, if we were to benefit more people. If after reading the teachings of ancient sages and virtuous people, we were able to believe, to accept, to abide by the teachings, then we would receive inexhaustible merits and benefits. If we are unable to believe in the teachings, thinking them unreliable, it is due to our karmic obstacles. And we will miss out on any real improvement in this lifetime. We will allow this marvelous, this unbelievably rare opportunity to pass us by. What opportunity? To learn the wisdom of virtuous sages and wise people. To learn the wisdom of Buddhas and bodhisattvas. Recently, I was again requested to give Dharma talks on the Infinite Life Sutra. It is not possible to comply with this wish at this time because we do not have an English translation that has been approved yet of this sutra. But this really is okay. When I first began to listen to Venerable Master Jing Kong, I felt so frustrated because I could not read the Infinite Life Sutra, could not listen to any of teacher's talks without a translator. And at that time, we did not have the many excellent translators that we now have. I deeply felt the frustration of needing a translator for every word teacher said, when all those around me could simply walk in off the street and understand, listen to every word he said. But after a recent conversation that I had with someone who had listened to teacher's words, to his talks, for many years, I realized there is listening and there is hearing. They were listening. I was hearing. I have had the great good fortune to be here in Singapore, to be a guest of the Amitabha Buddhist Society and the Singapore Buddhist Lodge. Everyone here at the Society and the Lodge work with a determination, dedication, and diligence that is impossible for me to describe to you. It is due to their generosity, their work, that I have had the time to hear teacher who has spoken every day for more than a year. Please understand that in a talk such as this, when I speak, they are teachers ideas, teacher's words. They are his understanding, his wisdom. I have little understanding, virtually no wisdom. Yet, in this recent conversation, I was asked a very basic question. And I intuitively understood. The person who listened to teacher every day for many years did not. For almost 2 months, I have been immersed in working on the teachings of a translation of a 20-tape series of talks on Liao Fan's four lessons, which teacher gave a few years ago. It is an unbelievable opportunity that my fellow practitioners here in Singapore have presented to me. The level of understanding, the level, the depth of wisdom in these teachings is as essential, is as profound as those in the teachings the teacher is giving on the Flower Adornment Sutra, on the Infinite Life Sutra, on the Earth Treasure Sutra. Such understanding and wisdom arise from the truly wise teacher and are to be found in his teachings, whether they are on Liao Fan's Four Lessons or on the Infinite Life Sutra. The Flower Adornment Sutra, the Infinite Life Sutra, and Liao Fan's Four Lessons all talk about the law of cause and effect, all teach us about changing our destiny. They all teach that everything arises from our minds, that we alone are responsible for everything that happens to us, that with proper seeking, we can attain whatever we seek. A son, long life, peace in our time, the ability to benefit all sentient beings throughout the universe in the past, present, and future. The ability to be born into the Western Pure Land. The ability to uncover our original, innate self-nature. The ability to become a Buddha. Whatever we wish for, we will attain when we seek with the mind, when we seek with the heart of utmost sincerity, purity, equality, and awakening. Selfishness and attachment no longer bind Buddhas and Bodhisattvas. Even when they have a small thought, even when they perform a small deed, their merits are infinite. In understanding this principle, our every thought will be perfect, and our merits and virtues will be infinite. The understanding of the wisdom of sages and virtuous people, of bodhisattvas, of Buddhas, can be attained by our proper seeking. Amitabha. Respected Dharma masters, respected practitioners and guests, a few days ago, a visitor was in Singapore and came to the Amitabha building to pick up some CDs and tapes. I was in the distribution room when she came in and was asked if I had some time because she had some questions. She told me that she understood the Buddha said not to blindly believe, but to question and examine what he taught for ourselves. Only after we examined and found what he said to be logical and true were we to believe. She said that when she practiced more, she found obstacles arising. Why, when she was trying to do good, were more bad things happening to her? How could she believe that cause and effect was really true? I told her about Liaofan's four lessons, which she was already familiar with. But she questioned how she could believe in something that happened 400 years ago. Did I not have something that was a little more current? I explained to her that one of the first reasons I became a Buddhist was the law of cause and effect. I have one sister. We have the same parents. We were raised in the same environment. We were taught the same things. We went to the same schools. Why then are we so different? She likes movies. I like to read. She likes to collect things. I was happy to give mine away. She is a very successful, very dynamic businesswoman. I am obviously a Buddhist nun. She is very extroverted and outgoing. I almost pass out before giving a Dharma talk. When photos are taken, she heads for the very center of the group. I always head for the back row. We are so very different. Why? The law of cause and effect. We are both the result of our accumulated causes over infinite lifetimes. The law of cause and effect was, as I said, one of the primary reasons for me becoming a Buddhist. It was logical. It was what the Buddha taught. It made sense. It is the only thing that has explained many things in my life. Believing in the law of cause and effect is very important. It is stressed very heavily in the first lesson of Liaofan. For the first lesson is primarily about the law of cause and effect. The first lesson concentrates on creating the confidence to change our destiny and the ways in which to do so. The second and third chapters place emphasis on the methods. Thus, they are concerned mainly with the ways to reform, the ways to refrain from wrongdoing, to accumulate virtue, and to change destiny. From the text. During the spring-autumn period, China was divided into several small nations. Many prestigious advisors and counselors of these nations were able to accurately predict whether a person's future would be good or bad, fortunate or unfortunate, based on their observations of that person's speech and behavior. Many of these are recorded in history books. End quote. From here, we can see the reality in ancient philosophy. Spring-autumn is an historic account of the Lu Nation. It is a period mentioned often throughout Liaofan's four lessons and refers to a period in China's history over 2,000 years ago when the country was going through a period a great turmoil and change. Throughout his lifetime, Confucius edited and compiled these records into a book, which has been passed down through the centuries to this day. This book has commentaries written by many people. The most popular and widely studied one has been extensively footnoted by Jiao Mingzhou, and it is called the Spring-Autumn Annals, one of the five classics. Confucius collected and edited the records in the Spring-Autumn Annals by Zhou, but he was not the author. Two other editions are the Gongyang Biography and the Guliang Biography. By far, the Spring-Autumn Annals is the most accurate, best written, and footnoted. All three editions have been compiled into the 13 ancient Chinese scriptures. Mr. Liao Feng told his son that many advisors during this period were able to accurately predict whether a person's future would be good or bad, fortunate or unfortunate, based on their observations of that person's speech and behavior. In other words, they could accurately predict a person's good fortune or misfortune just by his or her speech and behavior. These predictions were later proven to be true. On an individual basis, these people could tell a person's success or their failure. On a much larger scale, they could predict a country's rise and decline. Many of these examples have been proven in studies in the articles found in the Spring-Autumn Annals and the National Language, all of which tell of ancient Chinese history. These individuals had this ability because they understood the law of cause and effect. When our speech and our actions are good, and we are dignified and considerate, then it is safe to say that we will possess good fortune and a promising future. On the other hand, if our speech is harsh and our actions frivolous, then our future will be gloomy. Even if we seem to be doing well now, this period of success will not last. Like the flower that blooms only once in 100 years. Since our speech and actions can predict destiny, extra caution must be placed on our desires and on our behavior. From the text. Usually, there are signs that signal impending danger or the coming of good fortune. These signs are a reflection of one's mind. Though it is the mind from which thoughts arise, one's appearance can fully portray a person's character. End quote. This is not just a theory, but a fact that applies to both individuals and to countries. A sign always precedes the actual occurrence of any event. The sign originates from the original intention and is seen in thoughts and behavior. This is why calm and logical people are able to observe and predict future changes. They can see a nation's rise and fall through the actions and desires of its citizens. It is said, a country is based on its people. Just by observing the hearts and minds of people, by observing what they are thinking and doing, we can foresee a country's future, whether it is going to prosper or decline. The same applies to families. The manner in which the household members think and behave will greatly affect its failure or success. And this is true for individuals as well. There is a sign for everything, and it is usually obvious to someone who has sufficient understanding and training to see it. From the text, usually, a person is more fortunate when tending toward kindness and invites trouble when tending towards meanness. Ordinary people often do not see what is going on. It is as if their vision were blurred. Since they cannot see the true reality, they claim that good fortune and misfortune are unpredictable. End quote.